I started in therapy at 3, discovered that I had different personalities and parts. This therapist, she was actually a programmer. She started doing hypnosis. The first location, like a purple place of purple, is connected to like end of world programming inside the warehouse. It looks like a nightclub.
So you went from being abused by these perpetrators.
And there's demonic stuff happening in my body, responding sexually to this therapist. Programming and ritual abuse stuff was happening in the spirit realm. My body was like frozen and numb while these things were happening.
You're listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall.
Hey friends, we got an awesome show for you today. Before we get started, I just want to remind all of you, danduvall.com is the home of the Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall podcast. And for those of you that really enjoy what we're doing here and want to support it, you can become a podcast patron. It's just $5 a month, and you will get early access to these podcasts as part of that and coupons to our store at danduvall.com. And so we're going to get started. Don't go anywhere. We're back on Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall, and I am sitting here with a very special person. Her name is Sula. She's joined me once before. She's a transformational strategist, trafficking survivor expert, and empowerment consultant committed to equipping individuals, nonprofits, and service providers in the anti-trafficking movement. She herself is a survivor of trafficking to Hollywood, the ultra rich. That was some of the things that we talked about the first time that I was with her. She has a book called The Unashamed Bride and several websites, SulaLayel.com and Take Flight Survivors. Mm-hmm. Sula, we're already emoting and crying and shedding tears in the presence of God. It's so good to have you.
Oh my goodness. Dan, thank you so much for having me back. And just thank you, you and your wife and your team, for all that you've done as forerunners and pioneers in this work. Just want to start out the gate by just saying I honor you. I have a lot of respect for you, and really thankful to be here. So, yeah.
Well, we're thankful to have you. And we have a lot to talk about, Sula.
A lot.
We have a lot to talk about. And I kind of want to just dive in on the anti-trafficking movement itself. Mm-hmm. Because this has been a space that you came into as a survivor. Mm-hmm. Now you're on the other side advocating for survivors. Mm-hmm. And you've met a lot of people in this space.
Absolutely.
And I think that this is a space where you have a lot of service providers that don't fully understand the problem they're trying to solve or minister into. I think you would agree.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm going to start off with asking the question, why?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I feel like we are in another wave of awareness in our nation, well, really the world, similar to in 2000 when the TVPRA came out and, you know, we started having language for what sex trafficking is at that time. I mean, we as survivors were still getting arrested, treated like prostitutes, crack hoes, or whatever during that time, you know, criminalized. Mm-hmm. And that's when our nation started waking up and you know, started having language for what was happening. And it's like, oh, wow, we were being victimized. And now there's laws, you know, that were coming out and conversation. And the nation really woke up to what sex trafficking was. And I feel like right now we are in another wave of awareness regarding ritual abuse in the anti-trafficking space specifically. And I know you've been pioneering this work, you and your ministry, for many years, but I would say in the anti-trafficking space, this is just now starting to come to the surface. So for individuals that have been in the anti-trafficking movement for some time, that's challenging that there's a whole new demographic of people being victimized in a way that they just don't necessarily understand. And so without survivor voices and without more conversation around these topics, you actually do have a divide. You've got some in the anti-trafficking space that are saying that occult crimes, satanic ritual abuse is just a mental health psychosis and that it's not actually real. And this is so damaging to the lives of survivors that are actually seeking help and struggle to even get the words out to say what happened to them. And then now they're being told, oh, it has to be schizophrenia or it has to be some type of mental health psychosis. It's really all in your head. I've just seen how damaging that's been to so many. And we now have statistics coming out, even Rescue America, that about 20% of the survivors that call the hotline seeking help with escaping their traffickers have these experiences in their background. So this is like so much more prevalent than people realize. Yet there are some that are saying that it's just mental health, which is really painful to hear.
Well, and I would add, right, because you threw out that 20% that know that that's in their background.
That are aware.
Because when you add the dissociation layer on top of this thing, how many traffic survivors don't remember?
Right.
Or it's intentionally walled off.
Correct.
What is the consequence of this lack of understanding?
Yeah, I would say the greatest consequence that, and this is grieving. This is so grieving. I mean, I think the greatest consequence is that a survivor that hasn't been believed, well, I'll share two, actually. Number one, they don't feel like there's hope. Because now the people that they're entrusting to help them don't believe them. Number two, I see a lot of this happening in faith-based organizations or spaces in the anti-trafficking movement. And it would cause somebody that has experienced ritual abuse in their background to say, I don't want this Jesus that you guys are talking about. Ooh. And that is an eternal consequence. Ooh. And so many times when I'm working with survivors, like a lot of the conversation and the prayer and the work is centered around them being able to just trust the true Jesus. And I know there's a lot of reasons why, but if they've met people that have misrepresented him, even, you know, well-meaning people in the anti-trafficking space, it makes it so much harder to get to him. It's like when Jesus was literally flipping tables and like confronting the Sadducees and the Pharisees and the religious leaders. And he said, like, woe unto you. You make it hard for people to enter into the kingdom. You make it hard. And that's what I see happening. And it's like, it's horrible.
So you're basically contending, and I agree, that it is a misrepresentation of Jesus for a faith-based organization that wants to help survivors of human trafficking to come back and say, we're going to disqualify your memories of lived experiences that include occult and ritual abuse.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying it. And, you know, my perspective of this, I've been working with survivors of SRA and deep occult backgrounds for over a decade. So that has been my whole frame of reference. And my entry into the trafficking space actually comes by way of how many of the survivors of occult and ritual abuse are also trafficked as part of that experience. What I didn't realize that I'm coming around to is how much the occult methods of mind control and abuse have been worked into the strategies that the pimps and the handlers are using, it seems, across the board.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, there's like training on how to be a pimp that talks about breaking someone's soul and breaking their mind, you know. And so, yeah, 100%. Last time we talked, I remembered you saying something. You said, something along the lines of sex trafficking is programming.
Mm.
And I don't know why I'd never thought about that before, but before we had that talk, but oh my gosh, 100%. Pimps and traffickers are literally training you on what to do, what not to do, code words, doing it in a certain way. Like it literally is a type of programming, 100%. So yeah. And I just feel like for individuals that are saying that just can't wrap their minds around this being real, it's like you would have to go really far to omit world history and biblical history to say that this is only a mental health psychosis. It's actually in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
SRA trafficking is in the Bible. So as a believer, to say, oh no, this is just mental health psychosis, then you have to throw away parts of scripture. You have to throw away everything that Hitler did. You have to throw away all the unclassified government documents that our country, you know, all of the projects that you have to throw away a whole lot to rest on that stance. And so I would just say for people to do their own research before just accepting someone's narrative on this topic, because what I found as I started digging into the word, because I'm like, Lord, just show me.
Mm.
I'm a word girl. I love the Bible. The Bible was part of my personal deprogramming process, was getting in the Word of God and experiencing the Word of God. And the Lord showed me that the pagan rituals of the Old Testament,
mm-hmm.
like literally what would happen, and there's scriptural references to this, and there's also historical references that parallel the Bible. Different travelers and historians, you know, along that time that speak about this as well. But there would be a pagan temple. A family would dedicate their child, male or female, to the pagan temple in order to be a shrine prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
And there's various words that were used in the word for that. But they didn't have the word trafficking back then. They didn't have the words ritual abuse back then. And so they would be dedicated to that deity, to that goddess, to whoever that pagan of that temple was, in service to that demonic entity. And the people of the area would come and have ritual sex with these victims and pay donations to the temple.
Yes.
So you have sex trafficking because there's an exchange of value. Mm-hmm. And then they're thinking, these people coming doing these fertility rituals or whatever they're doing are thinking their crops are going to prosper. Their land is going to prosper. Their families are going to prosper if they're in good with that demon.
Mm.
That ritually abused victim, sex trafficking victim, is now completely tethered to and sexually servicing all of these individuals. And so it's all over the word. Even God had to tell the people, like, don't bring me any ritual, like, don't bring me any offerings
mm-hmm.
that you got through, like, shrine prostitution and, like, ritual. Like, don't bring that over here. He actually had to tell the people not to do that because it was just so common. It's all over the Old Testament. It's in the New Testament. And that's the same process that I see today. I mean, with SRA trafficking, it's like it's splitting, it's fracturing the soul of victims, tethering those different parts to different demonic entities, programming them. And then when they are being trafficked, sold, exploited,
mm-hmm.
those individuals are coming into agreements and covenants, and those demons get access to their life. It's really the easiest way for demons to spread is through fornication and through sexual perversion and rape and assault. Like, it's like a direct, Satan doesn't even have to build up a whole, he don't even got to tell lies. So it's like, it's like if you're a believer and you're saying this isn't true, I just want to challenge and encourage you to please get in the word.
Come on.
And get into some world history, because we can't, with the harvest of survivors that are out there and child survivors being abused by MS-13 gang members and cartels, and we know a lot about that, like, that are out there, who do you think those gangs serve? Like, there's ritual abuse happening with hundreds of thousands of children and adults in our own country.
Yes.
So if we as service providers, as the church, as the bride of Christ, don't understand this stuff, what are we going to do with this harvest? Because they're coming out.
Well, they're absolutely coming out. And that's I think that we're going to see a greater exodus of trafficked survivors in the next few years than we've ever seen before. I think that there's a lot that's going on in the spirit world that's facilitating that, personally. Yes. Paul, in his letters to the first and second Corinthians, mm-hmm. though the letter to the Corinthian church, many have suggested the reason why he was spending so much time dealing with like sexual mm-hmm. sin mm-hmm. in those letters is because of the temple that was in Corinth.
Yes.
Where it is suggested by some historical references exactly what you're saying. Mm-hmm. There was temple prostitution. Mm-hmm. I've always wondered as well, there's another story in the book of Judges where a guy takes his wife and they travel through the land of Benjamin and then they are basically wanting the guy, but he throws his wife out to them. And then they abuse her until morning, and mm-hmm. she is then dead. And it is an awful story. I have always assumed that abuse included elements of satanic and ritual mm-hmm. abuse because it killed her.
Yeah.
She didn't survive it. And, mm-hmm. you know, so when you talk about biblical references, I mean, yes, sister, yes and amen. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned something that I want to just ask you a little bit more about.
Yeah.
You said there is training for pimps on how to break the soul. Now, is this something you have firsthand knowledge of?
Yeah. I didn't want to go into like reading the books, but there are books out there on how to do this. Mm. Yes. And like, that's just regular sex trafficking pimp culture. There are books.
Like publicly available books?
Yes.
Like you could buy it on Amazon?
I don't recommend anybody going to read them. But yes, they are publicly available books on like how to break the soul, how to control victims. Yes. And that's just from a sex trafficking standpoint. They're not talking about ritual abuse or mind control programming, but it is mind control programming.
Golly. You know, I shouldn't be surprised, but I'm kind of surprised. Mm-hmm. I've never read, obviously, one of these books. Mm-hmm. But, wow. Mm-hmm. So they just buy these books. Someone wrote it. They give it mm-hmm. out. They use it. They train these people.
They train younger pimps on how to do this. Yeah.
Golly. So you were yourself trafficked. Mm-hmm. And you were trafficked to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Wealthy handlers, handler. And I guess today I want to ask this question. Did your trafficking include elements of occult and ritual abuse? And if so, where did it begin?
Absolutely. And even before I answer that, I just want to, again, say thank you for this space and opportunity to talk about it, because I've shared my story since 2010 yeah. in the anti-trafficking space. But what I'm going to share today, I've never shared. So it's not in any of my books. It's not in any trainings. This is the first time that I'm even going to go into some of these details. And so yeah.
Wow.
For me, in the beginning of life, really, you know, my mom was single, hardworking mom. Going to school, you know, working to make a living for us. So she had to trust people to watch me. So from 18 months old to 3 years old was my first exploitation and ritual abuse experience. So I was a toddler being watched and entrusted with this family, and they were actually exploiting me. And so they had like all of these different mattresses on the floor upstairs. And my first memories of even being alive are being moved from mattress to mattress to mattress, and adults and big body parts, and me hiding, trying to hide, being pushed under comforters, being taught that oral sex with adults is normal. And so that's what I thought was, you know, okay, this is just part of life. It was, how else could I have survived that without splitting or fracturing? Because I was a baby. And so my mom ended up finding out when I asked her to give me oral sex one day at 3 years old. Because that's what my abusers said you're supposed to do. And so mixed in with the sexual exploitation was also really being initiated into the occult. And so it was very, so for me, my memories of physical abuse were, I experienced equally things in the spirit realm as well. So it was common for me to have different occult members coming into my room at night by way of astral projecting in and hurting me, even when I wasn't at their house, abusing me, hurting me in the spirit realm. And demons coming and raping me. And then also me being taken to places. So nighttime was worse than day for me. And I didn't have to be in the physical location with them to still be hurt and ritually abused and programmed, because once they initiated me in, the spirit realm was wide open and, you know, other types of abuse started.
Now, there are a lot of people that deal with exactly what you're talking about. We can apply certain terms, mm-hmm. astral rape, mm-hmm. Sleep paralysis leading to astral rape. We could apply the term spirit husbands and spirit wives, or just spirit spouses. Mm-hmm. People are suffering mm-hmm. because they're going through these kinds of experiences. It's violating. It's demoralizing. There's a lot of people that don't know how to make it stop permanently. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot of those phone calls. So people will show up asking me for help on these things. Do you believe that what opened the door to that harassment in your life was the physical abuse that these people perpetrated?
You know, that's an interesting question, because I think there's probably two answers to that. So I think that there was an official initiation because of the abuse that was happening. But I also had to do a lot of, like, I had to work through praying off stuff that was on my generational lines and stuff too. Like my grandma on my biological father's side, who I didn't grow up knowing him, but she was full blood Maroon from Jamaica. Mm. And these are the slaves that got freedom from the British and escaped. And they used occult power and witchcraft to get away from the British. And they ended up getting their own Maroon territory in Jamaica. Because the British were so terrified to even approach them anymore because of the level of the occult and shape-shifting and stuff that they were doing. And they really took a lot of pride in their community because of getting liberated and getting free from slavery. But they were also very much about, like, you don't, you know, like, being full-blood Maroon was, like, a huge honor to have not had mixture with any other, you know. And so I had that, and I had other stuff on my, you know, both sides, I had stuff generationally that I had to deal with. So I think that the generational occult, witchcraft, Freemasonry, things on my generational lines, that made me vulnerable mm-hmm. and attractive in the spirit realm to Satan. Mm-hmm. And then when the abuse started, I believe that was like the official access point of, okay, now let's just bring everything upon her, if that makes sense.
Golly.
And so I even remember, like, one of the experiences was like rotating my soul to face down and now have an open view of hell while I was physically being abused. And so it was like they were intentionally splitting and fracturing my soul through the abuse that they did.
18 months to 3 years old.
Yes.
So you have a memory of this is happening to you.
Yes.
And then your soul turns and you're actually looking dimensionally.
They spun my soul or rotated my soul to the point where then now I'm facing down into realms of hell and seeing and witnessing all kinds of really disgusting, horrible stuff, which I won't go fully into detail of, but really horrific things. And so that's what I was looking at while my body was physically being abused and while there was ritual activity happening in the room in the natural.
So did your mom separate you from these abusers at three?
Yes, thankfully, because whenever she found out, when I asked her for oral sex at three, she started an investigation. Like, we got, of course, got me away from there, and then found therapy, which was a whole nother story for me at three. And so she handled it really well in the best way she knew how. And when I started in therapy at three, it was very quickly discovered that I had different personalities and parts. Mm-hmm. And so the therapist, when she would talk to me, I would like be turning to part. She would be asking me about questions about the things I went through, and I would turn it. I would talk to that part of me to be like, she wants to know this, you know. And my mom always just thought I had like imaginary friends, mm-hmm. not knowing I was all of the imaginary friends. Like, I was speaking to myself, you know, I was interacting with myself. But that was really exciting, mm-hmm. To this therapist, because she, in Berkeley, she was actually a programmer. And so she started doing hypnosis. And when she realized that I had different soul parts, she started doing different types of therapy, which involved programming, which involved bringing me. The first location that she brought me into was like a purple place. Like, all the trees had like the purple flowers on them. And she told me that she was establishing a safe place, mm-hmm. that I could always come back here. All of my parts should always come back here. But it was really a starting place and a programming location. So progressing further into that purple place, there was also a warehouse. And inside the warehouse, when you first come in, it kind of looks like a nightclub. And inside, you're spiraling from one room, one programming room, to the next, all the way inside, kind of like one of those, like the spiral staircase, or like a Nautilus shell, if you were to cut open a Nautilus shell. Like, that's what the inside of this programming location looked like. And so that, when she realized I had fractured personalities and soul parts, that was her, like, her initial establishing of, like, my, like, an internal world for me. And I later found out that, like, all of the purple that was used in that is connected to, like, end-of-world programming and stuff. And so it was like I had a lot of experiences with being taken there after she opened that up and established that and led me there and saw that I had the ability to be led in the spirit realm, and that my parts could handle that kind of stuff. That just opened up, you know, a whole nother thing.
So you went from being abused by these perpetrators to being placed with a therapist that was a programmer. Mm-hmm. And she then took the opportunity to help you build an inner world, mm-hmm. where you could be further programmed.
And it's just, and it's so sick because, well, for so many reasons, but she even did something with, like, Disney. She was an overweight, heavy set woman. No judgment at all to anybody's body shapes. I'm just, for reference, sharing, because she ended up utilizing, like, Disney programming and did some weird thing to create within me, like, a sexual attraction to Ursula in the movie Ariel and the programming that's in that movie. So at 3 years old, there's demonic stuff happening in my body, responding sexually to this therapist who did something in her programming to cause me to respond that way to her and to the programming in that movie. And I don't know if it's, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know if Ursula being purple also has something to do with that too, but
Now, I have to ask a question.
Yeah.
Did she access and abuse you too?
That's a really good question. Maybe we can talk and pray about that further another time, Dan. I mean, I have to assume that there was sexual abuse that happened during that programming. And a lot of the things that I remember is while I was focused on being programmed, that there were other things happening physically while I'm in locations. And that happened with the occult ritual abuse and with the programming. Because I don't know, I don't think it's possible for there to be a physical sexual response to Disney Princess programming without also physically things happening to me while I was being taken to different realms and programmed in different ways.
Thank you for the way that you're explaining this and breaking it down. You're doing a great job.
Thank you. It's a lot.
End of the world programming. Now, I've been helping people deprogram with the power of Jesus Christ for over a decade. And we've gone to so many places. And even the fact that you bring up Ursula, that's like, you know, underwater kingdom. And I'm going to leave that off the table for now. But yeah. One of the common themes that's come up over and over again is end time programming, which has to do with globalists, which have to do with elite powers of darkness and their antichrist agendas to bring about the end of the age their way, and to use the programmed survivor population that they've been able to perpetrate their agenda on to help. And so we run into a lot of end times programming. Now, you'd use the term end of the world programming. What does that mean to you?
I think it's the same. Probably just different terminology for the same thing. Yeah. And for me, it also included like false Jesus programming as well.
Wow.
So for me, I had a lot of experiences of a false Jesus showing up and like raping me and sexually abusing me and really just disgusting, perverted views of this false Jesus with erections and things like that. So for me, that was connected in with the end times, end of the world, with all of that programming. And so when I did get saved, I had to work through all of that junk because it was like I knew that there was truth in the word. But when I would pray, well, first of all, when I first got saved, all hell broke loose in my life with all of the everything just started kicking up in the spirit realm like wild. But I had to really work through navigating that space because the real Jesus, Yeshua, is not a rapist. He's not perverted. He's not nasty. He's not any of those things. And so that was connected to that programming and several other locations that I was brought after. I think like the groundwork was laid in those first experiences of abuse. Then it was like most of the programming and ritual abuse stuff was happening in the spirit realm from then on. So I was with that programmer for 6 months. So a lot was established during that time. And then after that, a lot of it was just in the spirit realm. So I was going through my testimony of all the stuff happening in the natural, you know, and continuing to end up in trafficking situations, continuing to struggle with the dissociative fractured parts, continuing to struggle with substance abuse and horrible abusive relationships. And but spiritually, I was continuing to struggle with being pulled to different realms at night and, you know, those horrible things happening in the programming that was just continuing to happen in the spirit realm. And in things where like waking up from nightmares and I'm like, that was real.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, and on that point, And I've said this in other contexts before, but one of the scariest realities of this world is that our experience and ability to be hurt and abused is not limited to the physical 3D world.
Right.
And that's, I think, something that the anti-trafficking movement needs to start taking extremely seriously. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, some people have such a basic understanding. It's like, okay, let's find a good-looking Hollywood guy. He's going to go and save the children by mm-hmm. shooting someone that's a really bad person in the head. That's a great film. And when we get those kids out of that situation, we'll put them in a good place and they'll be happy from that point forward. Mm-hmm. Happily ever after.
They're saved.
They've been saved.
They've been rescued.
And what that story doesn't include is what happens when that kid goes to bed that night mm-hmm. and their abusers show up and continue hitting them because they all astral project, they remote view, they have abilities in the occult world, they mm-hmm. send demonic agents against them, and the kids in still torment and can be pulled out of body mm-hmm. and taken to locations in the spirit world and in the physical world on the astral plane to then go through further rituals. I mean, at any ritual site, and this is something I've learned because I've worked with people that have survived the occult so long, you will have maybe you have 13 people in a coven and they start to do a ritual yeah. at a location. They have their altar, they have mm-hmm. their books, they have their candles or whatever their elements mm-hmm. of witchcraft are. But there may be 100 people there in the spirit world
Correct.
In their astral form.
Yes.
So at that ritual site where this evil is occurring, some of those people are there because they're intentionally going there and that's what they do as witches or warlocks. And then there are victims that are being pulled out of body and trafficked to those locations to be abused with the events occurring in the physical, but in the spirit.
Yeah.
And all of this causes damage. Mm-hmm. None of it is without consequence. And I think that is where you can't really separate the anti-trafficking movement from the agenda of Jesus Christ.
There's no way. I see survivors struggle. I feel like so much longer
mm-hmm.
and without Jesus than survivors that I know that encounter Jesus and the true one, the real one, and start their healing journey. Because it's too complex.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about abuse happening with the soul and fractured parts, when you talk about the spirit man and the abuse happening with your spirit, and then also body, soul, and spirit, you can't just address the body and the mental health, it's so multifaceted. And the power of the kingdom of heaven that Jesus came to establish, the realm of the kingdom, bringing heaven on earth, was such good news. Not only the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, but the kingdom of heaven being established on earth, because being trafficked and exploited, whether you've experienced the ritual abuse site or not, you have experienced realms of hell, whether you know it or not, being exploited by Satan, by people under Satan's influence. And so coming out of so much darkness, and even if you talk to a survivor of sex trafficking that maybe doesn't have recollection of any ritual abuse activity, but they sure know that demons have shown up. Mm-hmm. They'll talk about seeing black figures coming in the room. They'll talk about all kinds of horrific stuff happening at night. And they'll talk about the astral rapes and all these things happening at night. And they may not know about ritual abuse or even have ritual abuse in their past, but they're definitely dealing with the spiritual warfare elements of it. And so when we learn not only about who Jesus is and what Jesus did for us while he was on the earth, and then also through his death, burial, and resurrection, the reality of the kingdom of heaven is such good news that there's righteousness, peace, and joy available, that it's not just a bunch of talk, impressive words, it's power, that we can actually he commissions out his disciples, heal the sick, cast out demons, cleanse those with leprosy, raise the dead. So the whole body, soul, and spirit can actually completely be healed and delivered and set free. And then also, like, for me, a huge part of the healing was, oh my gosh, I can be clean. Like the righteousness, when he said, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and then all these lesser things will be given to you. That righteousness piece was like, oh my gosh, stepping into that revelation of the kingdom. Because I felt my entire life so dirty from everything that I went through. And so he actually healed and restored and delivered and deprogrammed my body, my soul, and spirit. And like my physical body is healthy. That is a miracle. It's a miracle that I'm not insane. It's a miracle that I'm even alive. I've tried to take my own life. I've had guns held to my head. I could have been dead and gone so many times over the course of my testimony time. But it really is true. Like God's word really is true. And Jesus really is the solution. He's the whole solution, the whole way, the truth and the life to completely being healed and restored.
So well stated. Talk to me about the Disney stuff, mm-hmm. and doll programming.
Yeah, I think that was a part of really setting me up for. It made me even more susceptible to future trafficking experiences, mm-hmm. Because. For me, with the Disney Princess programming, it involved Disney movies being played as a toddler, stripping and dancing and doing a princess dance. And it involved, like, good girl programming, being a good girl, following all of the commands of what I was being told to do and being like a princess, and being essentially just being that doll, being whatever they wanted me to be. And so what was interesting is other traffickers in my future, you know, exploitation. I remember one time, like when I was trafficked overseas as an adult from Hollywood I was sold to a billionaire clothing designer, and he's a Satanist. And one of the girls, when she initially was confronting me once I landed there, she was like, they do this thing called, and I don't know what you call it, but like I call it like trauma checking and like program checking to like see, like they'll say certain code words and like look at your eyes to see if your eyes dilate and yes. to see like if you're, so I don't know, you probably have a better term for that, but that's just what I call it. But she did that, and she was trying to see, she was using like good girl and like different words that were connected to programming. So I'm like, how do these people know? It's like you're marked in the spirit realm once you engage in or are forced to engage in, rather, these different types of programming. It's like in the spirit realm, people in the occult can see it and know it.
Now, in all of your explanation, I mean, you don't believe, however, that you were signed up for a project. You believe that you just went from one bad situation to the next and kept being identified by these occultists and people in the know.
I think that I was initiated in. I think that there was very strategic intention by the programmer.
Okay.
I was only with her for 6 months.
Yeah.
And I believe that there were things initiated and started.
Mm.
But there wasn't, well, I will say the thing that I kept ending up in was these different trafficking situations where I then would, the part of me that was the good girl, the princess, that would just the freeze trauma response, the fawn friend trauma response, like would just happen because of that programming and that setup. And then being I believe if anything, the programming that I was set up for was the sex slave, like sex trafficking, because I ended up getting sold to different celebrities in Hollywood and different elite people. And my programming made me the perfect candidate to service those individuals.
Golly.
Well, and, but it wasn't like at that point, like street level trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, if anything, I think that's what was, I was marked with and programmed to do and assigned to do. Because that's what I saw kept happening over and over and over and over, no matter where I moved, no matter what I did, no matter what was going on, until I got completely set free.
So I have here in front of me, mm-hmm. Hitler concentration camp programming.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does that play into all of what you just said, sister?
I know. So that was a realm that I would get pulled into.
A realm.
A realm.
Meaning not in the physical
world.
Not
in the physical world. This was a realm. So I would get pulled into this realm that was a concentration camp, where I would be lined up and numbered with, I don't even know how many. And it was like the barbed wire fences all the way around the perimeter, buildings, warehouses behind, torture and all kinds of things that were happening in these buildings. And the bad people would actually have German shepherds, and they would move down the line, and it was like you could feel the evil coming towards you and the momentum of that happening. And it was like, I don't know how, but something about with the dogs, that's how they would come up and they would select which one of us programmed, victimized people that were lined up that were going to be hurt or further programmed or taken somewhere else from that place. And so I experienced that in the spirit realm. And when all this stuff is going on, you don't really know what type of programming this is or what type of, until you start learning later on. Well, I don't want to say that for everybody, but for me, I wasn't fully aware of like what it was until I started healing.
So there's abuse happening in the physical.
Yeah.
Abuse happening in the spiritual.
Yes.
Now, as you're going through it,
mm-hmm.
was it clear to you what was physical and what was spiritual the whole time? Or was there some confusion about that? Or was there an experience of not really knowing where the physical stopped and the spiritual started? It was just life.
I would say there was definitely confusion about it because of my fractured parts.
Mm-hmm.
And so switching parts. And then there were also things, like I mentioned earlier, where my consciousness was focused on whatever the programmer or the occult member wanted me to be focused on, like the spinning and rotating of my soul being, you know, fractured during stuff happening, where I wasn't fully aware of everything going on in the room, but I was focusing on what they led me to focus on, or in the programming, when I was in that programming location of that purple place rotating from room to room. That's what my consciousness was aware of and looking at. But you ask about the physical abuse that happened with that therapist. I'm certain there was, but I wasn't focused on that at that time. My awareness after when she was hypnotizing me and bringing me into those places was there. So it was almost like my body was like frozen and numb while these things were happening, because they capitalize off of the dissociative state, you know? And so for me, yes, it was very confusing as far as a line of what all took place physically and then, you know, in the spirit realm. And then I will say, like, even in my healing and freedom journey, I would still have nightmares later in life of what happened to me early on, which is triggering because you wake up feeling like, you know, just the trauma of remembering all of those traumatic experiences from when you're younger. So it's like not only did I have to work through getting healing and freedom from that stuff, but then that work through the triggers. Like, what do you do when you're triggered? And stay present and don't split again. Don't refracture. Don't just because you're triggered. And so it's like the healing and the freedom, and then the staying free and getting rid of being harassed by the nightmares or the trauma. That was like a whole nother wave of healing after, to stop the nightmares of what happened. And Jesus did stop it. Now I sleep like a baby. Praise God. Wow. But I think that's another thing that sometimes I think survivors struggle with, is they think that because I'm triggered, I'm not healed, and the enemy will bring in condemnation and set up a trick and a trap right there, a hidden trap, to try to regain access to keep it going.
Wow.
And so I think that getting the healing and the freedom, of course, is major, but then also knowing how to stay free and having the support to stay free after is really important too.
You're doing such a great job. and breaking all of this down, I know that it's helping so many people, because this is lived experience. And for a lot of people, especially those that have backgrounds of different kinds of abuse, it's a journey of connecting the dots. There are so many people that have so many questions about, why did this happen to me? Why did that happen to me? Why am I still going through this? And there is a lack of affirmation available. And we're providing that. And you're just doing so well. And so, I want to just keep kind of going deeper for a second into some of this. So you were taken to this Hitler realm. Are there other realms that you remember specifically being trafficked to and programmed in?
There was this one location. I knew it was in Jerusalem. I don't know where, but where there was this, it was like a false holiness. It was a false holy location. So it looked like it was all white. But have you, like, if you ever seen, like, after, like, a bonfire, how there's, like, that white ash, you know, that's, like, the remains of, like, you know, whatever, the log being burnt. That's, like, what was all over the realm. So if you first look at it, it looks like holy. It looks like white. But it was actually that ash white. And it was a temple. And there was this like disgusting white dragon that was there. And so I was pulled into that realm, and I was wearing what looked like all white. And I was just in this line. And it was like, we had, when we got to the front of the line, we were raped by that thing.
Golly.
And so there's that. I mean, there's a few others, but that one was.
How old were you? Did you have an idea?
I believe that that happened, or being pulled into that realm, was somewhere in my childhood. But I don't remember like the exact age.
So this is one of those that came back to you as like a dream that wasn't a dream. And then, so you woke up having been abused and not really knowing what to do about it. I guess I don't have to ask, do you believe dragons are real?
Why, Dan? I think they are.
Oh, goodness. You know, the funny thing is, people like to, like, you know, chalk this up to just like fantasy. Like, oh, you believe in dragons. It's like, Satan is the red dragon. Like, he is. And frankly, I have dealt with people that have come from dragon bloodlines, because somehow spiritually, maybe this with a physical incarnation of some sort, so these spirits are able to see the way that they abuse people sexually is not always limited only to spiritual abuse. Like, there's another side of that whole thing. I mean, this is wild. And Jerusalem, I mean, you bring that up, is such a key place, because it is literally like the center of almost every major global ley line. All these ley lines converge mm-hmm. on Jerusalem. And so we could use the term energetic perspective, from an occult perspective, from a biblical historical perspective, like mm-hmm. Jerusalem is the center of mm-hmm. so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Jesus was no stranger to the powers of darkness mm-hmm. or confronting them. What has he shown you?
Yeah, I think when I started my healing journey, I mean, there's so much that he's that he's shown me. But one of the things that was really powerful as I was like working through the healing from all of this stuff in the spirit realm was in Matthew 4. Like, so we don't have a high priest that doesn't understand this stuff. Praise Jesus. Like, he subjected himself to so much to give us a solution and a strategy and a way. And so in Matthew chapter 4, when he was, you know, fasting and praying for 40 days and nights in the wilderness, and Satan came to tempt him and really wage war with him, I had always read over that like, oh, maybe it was just like a conversation on a park bench. Like, they were just like talking. But when you really like get into it, and for sake of time, I'm just going to jump to the third time that Satan came to him, which interestingly, he took him to Jerusalem too. Mm-hmm. But the third time was, it said that he pulled him up, and it was in the spirit realm. Mm-hmm. The Lord allowed himself to experience the worst warfare, I believe, that exists, where he was pulled up to a high mountain, to a high place. And Satan showed him all the kingdoms of the world and was saying, I'll give you all this if you bow down and worship me. Now, we know that's in the spirit realm because there's no mountain that exists where you could see in the natural all of the kingdoms of the world.
Yeah.
The world's not flat. If anybody didn't know that.
I believe you. I believe you.
So
now you might get some arguing people in the comments, but we won't.
That's okay.
I'm with you.
God bless all the people that argue in the comments. Lord, let them encounter you, Jesus. We bless them, Lord. But he was pulled in the spirit realm, and you know he's waging war. This is warfare in the spirit realm. We know it had to be a huge warfare because even Jesus himself needed angels to minister to him after coming out of that.
Mm.
Like, angels came to minister to him after this. Mm-hmm. But the thing that's so beautiful is the power of the word of God mm-hmm. that Jesus responded with every time of the three times that Satan came against him. But when the Lord was showing that to me, it just brought so much healing to know that he experienced and humbled himself too. Be pulled in the spirit realm and engage in that level of warfare so that myself and everyone else that's experienced the same types of warfare being pulled in realms would know my Jesus the understands. Like, he understands me, and he also has the strategy of how to get out of this stuff. And I feel like that level of understanding to me is also a beautiful like demonstration of love. Because when he tells me he loves me, I'm like, he loves me, but he also really understands me. I can talk to him about anything. And he humbled himself to go through. He didn't have to go through any of that. And he certainly didn't have to go through the cross, but did. And we were the joy set before him that and gave him empowered him to be able to continue going through it. But then he also descended into hell, took the keys from Satan, and rose with all power and authority in his hands. So he went into every realm. I think it's in Ephesians, but there's a scripture where it talks about he went into every realm, led captive. Like, he established his authority and his power and his dominion everywhere. So there is no place that a person could be trapped in that the power and the authority of Jesus, who loves them and understands and is not angry at them or judging them or harsh or legalistic with them. He loves them. He understands. And his authority and power can get into every single place because he overcame all of it and he went there for us. And then he invites us into that authority and power to move with him.
So beautifully stated. Wow. See, that's why I'm a Jesus guy. I mean, what other...
Good choice, Dan.
What other God is worth serving? I mean, you know, it's so interesting, you know, when I... when I'm working with people and I meet their parts that are very loyal to evil beings, including Satan, you know, oftentimes I'll ask them, well, how does Satan deal with you when you make a mistake?
Whoa.
You know, and they'll have a lot of arrogance and pride until that question gets asked, because the answer is always the same. Torture.
Yeah.
It's always punishment. Rule through fear. We have a God that rules through love, whose mercies are new every morning.
Thank you, Lord.
It's a game changer.
And I feel like even the fear of the Lord is from a place of love.
Come on.
It's like, I'm so in love with you that I put you first. It's not like Satan's type of fear. It's like a whole different thing. And so, yeah, he's so good. It's the only reason why I'm alive and sane and in my right mind and one soul and able to just do the work that I do. I would not be alive today without the Lord. There's absolutely no way.
So what happened at 12 for you?
So, yeah, so going back to 12, what was really interesting, and this is some of the stuff that I learned afterwards, again, with like understanding the types of programming that happened to me and also the timeline of my life, because there were significant ages, the 18 months to three, being initiated three. At nine, I started having a surge of all kinds of spiritual warfare and more being brought to different locations and programming stuff at age nine that was leading up to age 12, where then I made a decision to get into witchcraft, into Wicca, and because I was trying to make sense of all of the realms and the spiritual warfare and the people that were showing up in my room, but it got really intense at nine leading up to 12. And so at age 12, when I made that decision to just full-blown go into witchcraft, I'm thinking, oh, I'm a healer. I'm doing good. This is probably good stuff, because now everything is somewhat making sense, right? And this is all before I met Jesus, by the way. But I was led to do a ritual on the beach, and it was a satanic ritual, you know, drawn in a circle. And, I mean, the black hood, the whole getup. And I did a whole ritual on the beach with two other people, and that broke hell wide open even more.
Goodness.
But I thought, and so now that I realize, like in hindsight and in my healing journey, 12 is such a significant age. Also, I think because of what Jesus did at 12, that was like the first time that, independent of his earthly parents, he's like, I got to be about my Father's business. So there's something about like free will decisions made at 12, independent of parental decisions, that I feel like bring a whole nother layer of entanglement, of agreement with Satan, because now it's like you're kind of in the spirit realm looked at as an adult. And so, So that happened at 12. And so, again, it's so interesting learning and going back on the timeline of life. And I'm like, oh, now I see why at this age. And all the more just the reason for us to be so, so aware of the power of age 12, even as believers.
It's deep. Thank you for sharing that. And for the parents out there, that's also probably a helpful piece. So you did this at 12 and it just broke everything wide open. Now, when did you really start to be like, I guess, eyed for trafficking to Hollywood? Like, how were you still a teenager?
No, so I experienced exploitation at 14, again at 17 in San Francisco and the strip clubs and hotels there. But I didn't get to Hollywood until like age 20. Like I moved there thinking I was going to get into acting and modeling and that was going to be a great idea. I knew Jesus at that time. I was actually thinking, oh, maybe this is how I'll fulfill my purpose of like helping people and stuff like that. Now, I knew Jesus, but he was not fully leading my life. I wasn't fully surrendered or yielded. I just was including him in a little bit at that point. So there's a huge difference between knowing him a little bit and then being fully surrendered and your life being led by him. But so, yeah, age 20, I moved there for modeling and acting. And that's when I ended up getting exploited for 4 years in Hollywood. And it was kind of masked as, you know, going to auditions or like work for acting or modeling. And then it would always turn into some type of like just being raped or assaulted or and so I would be invited into some like even elite like after hours type parties where I would see big celebrities. Actually, like I remember one time opening a door on accident, and these celebrities, big names, I won't name them right now, but were in the middle of a ritual. They were sitting in it was a small room. And the chairs were all faced around, like backs to the walls. And they were all sitting in the chairs, faced forward. And I opened the door and I was like, and the sheer, like, evil and terror. And, like, closed the door. And that was in the natural, not in the spirit realm, that I saw that. And just realizing the people in Hollywood that are connected with a part of Satanism, Illuminati, and all of those things. Like, I think now it's all over. It's like, it's really easy to see. Like, if you can't look at some of these concerts and some of these things that are going on, like, and see it and recognize it, it's all over. But at that time, there weren't, like, really conversations about Satanism and ritual abuse and, like, rituals and all of that. So, for reference, I'm 41 now, so... That was a little while back. But yeah, and then I would get sold to people that were involved in the occult and different celebrities that I was supposed to be working for, but then I would realize, oh, this is what it's really about, and be hurt.
Now, with your background being between realms and recognizing that you had the parts. Now, as you got into this phase of your story from 20 to 24 and that exploitation, would you feel the parts taking over at times? And it would, did you know that was happening? Did you or was that just such a subconscious process? It didn't really register. And
that's a good question.
What role at that season, 20 to 24, did the other realms play in your experience?
I think that it was a subconscious thing at that time. I do, in hindsight, realize that there were certain individuals, because all of the exploitation in Hollywood wasn't necessarily with Satanists, but the ones that were involved in the occult, they always say those code words and things to kind of see, like, oh, what are we working with here, you know? And so I think for me, it was more of a subconscious thing. And I think I looked at it as more so like trauma responses, but I was switching. And then there were a lot of memories that were just like completely gone because a different part was experiencing it. So for me, it was more like a survival coping than it was me intentionally switching or knowing that I was switching. It was more so those programmed parts of me would take over and handle all of that. And then I would come out of a experience of, you know, being hurt by someone or raped in some mansion somewhere. And I just knew, I knew my body was hurting. I knew I was struggling with depression and with mental health challenges and confused and all of these things afterwards, and would just drink, you know, like just try to numb whatever was going on. So there was a lot of confusion, but I definitely had parts that would like take over. And Dan, I'm going to say I am thankful that I had parts. I'm thankful. And I think it's the brilliance of God that he created the soul in a way to compartmentalize trauma and unimaginable torture and pain, because I don't think I could have kept going in life with a full conscious awareness of everything I went through. So for the time of my life that I had parts, I'm so thankful that I did, because I don't think I would have been able to be alive if God didn't create the soul intentionally that way, so that he could then be the one that heals the fractured, broken heart and you know, restores and brings it all back together, because those parts would switch out and take on that torture, take on that abuse. And then I would keep going discombobulated, not even remembering. Like when I got sold overseas to the billionaire clothing designer and all the stuff that happened with that, like when I came back, I didn't remember it. I had no recollection of what happened when I was gone. It was years later that all of that, you know, started coming back up. So I'm thankful that I had parts when I did.
And that's one of the things that, you know, I've been saying for a long time, and, you know, I'll just reiterate it here because it's relevant. Mm-hmm. Dissociation isn't bad.
Right.
It's design. Everyone dissociates, and depending on how much trauma a person has survived, that dissociation may be more extenuating mm-hmm. or severe, and it only becomes a disorder or when the dissociation itself creates dysfunction in a person's life. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, when people have been through a lot of exploitation, mm-hmm. there is dysfunction that comes because of the different ways they've had to dissociate. But it's not it in and of itself is not bad. It is mm-hmm. design. God knew mm-hmm. we would need dissociation to survive this world. And I think that is something yeah. that survivors need to hear, because yeah. I think some people feel very guilty when they realize I have parts and there are different parts of me that do jobs, especially if those jobs are not so good right. jobs. And it can be a lot of shame and a lot of self-hatred around that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I believe actually that self-hatred and self-rejection sit at the root of maintaining a dissociative disorder. It's like, you know, I don't want to know those identities because they're the mm-hmm. worst parts of me that God would himself reject.
And
it's
that's like, so good.
That's not. There isn't a single part of you that Jesus doesn't love.
That's so good.
So when people get comfortable with the reality that dissociation is not bad, it's just design, I mean, it really helps to overcome some hurdles. It's like, you know, you didn't dissociate because you were weak or because you were bad or because you were not good enough. We all do it.
We're surviving.
And
That's so good. And also, parts are not demons. Can we just say that?
Wait,
just
go ahead,
record,
say it.
Please?
I mean, do you need to preach it?
let me get this mic. Like, that's something that the body of Christ has got to become more aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and now we're not even talking about just sex trafficking or ritual abuse, but just the average churchgoer in America, okay, that has parts. We can't look at, I've seen so many times that I experience it myself and so many others where well-meaning believers are trying to bind and rebuke and cast out parts of a soul and are screaming and demonizing these parts. And so it's like, I just think there's a beautiful opportunity for the body of Christ to learn, for people that are in deliverance or inner healing ministries to get better understanding, because they will be way more effective in the work that they do if they really understand God's design and dissociation and parts, and that they are not demons. You cannot cast out a part of somebody's soul and think that's going to result in healing. It's actually perpetuating the same trauma that probably caused that split or that fracture in the first place. Mm. And now you, as a person representing Jesus, have just become an abuser. And so I just think there's a beautiful opportunity. I think anybody that is in church, anybody that is on a prayer team, anybody that is in deliverance or inner healing ministry, one of the best things they could do in their continuing education is learn how to understand parts and how to navigate with that, you know, with wisdom, with the love of Christ, and certainly without judgment.
So now you are doing a lot in advocating for survivors, mm-hmm. and you teach on trauma-informed care. Mm-hmm. You have other outreach. What is the burden that God has put on the inside of you to bring to the survivor community and mm-hmm. and those that are escaping human trafficking?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. So we do have a survivor community, as well as like a service provider academy. I would say on the survivor community side, it's just having a place to continue growing in faith with others who understand, with mm-hmm. lived experience. And just having understanding and support, and we're all on fire for the Lord, like going after him in our healing journeys. There's just, I think that no matter where someone is at in their healing journey, whether they're like still experiencing some stuff, whether they're in a safe home or, you know, later in life, like having community of people that understand is just one of the greatest blessings. And a survivor-led community. So we do Bible study, prayer, you know, and just create different opportunities to continue healing and empowering each other, but not just focusing on the past, but also empowering to move forward from a kingdom perspective. And I would say on the service provider side, probably one of my greatest like burdens that I carry for teaching and training individuals about how to work with sex trafficking survivors is really to understand what's happening inside of us at those points of contact when they're trying to minister to us or help. Mm-hmm. And to me, trauma-informed care means truly understanding the trauma of the individuals you're serving. And I think that also carries over into deliverance settings. Mm-hmm. It's possible to do trauma-informed deliverance, you know, where it is like, Jesus-led and survivor-led, what the survivor is ready for, what they're choosing, what they feel safe to go into, and being empowered to build their own relationship with the Lord versus just codependency on someone that's helping them. And I think that's one of the greatest gifts that we can give to survivors of sex trafficking who are healing, is empower them to know how to interact with the Lord in a way where they can not just get free when they're sitting in a session, but now they know how to talk to the Lord. They know how to navigate on their own, and they can stay free because of that. Like, those are some of the things that I'm really compassionate, you know, about with service providers. And I also just want to say that, like, anybody that's saying yes to doing this work is a really incredible person, because it takes a lot of Christ-likeness and love and compassion to see people that have been through stuff like myself and say, I'm going to be a part of that, you know? So I think it's really important, even with people that are providing ministry and services to survivors, to experience, like, learning from a place of, like, the kingdom of heaven. Like, even though we're talking about dark stuff, we can still have joy and, like, peace. His joy is amazing. It's like there has to be a balance of you're doing the hard work, but you can also like encounter heaven, yes. and like encounter Jesus, yes. and like
be refreshed by the Holy Spirit and all of those things to do it and not be like a bitter Beatrice.
Come on.
Or an angry Pharisee. You know, so anyway.
Oh, I love humor. I mean, it is just, you know, I've met so many different personality types, and some of them are like, you know, wow, you are so upset right now at life. Deliverance has not, you know, done good for your joy. And there is a higher revelation. You know, Sula, there's a lot that we have covered. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot more because we didn't even touch your book.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to have you back.
Okay.
And we're going to get into a whole lot more on some of the other side of this conversation. Even the beautiful things that God has shown you, mm-hmm. Things that have contributed deeply to your healing journey that is going to translate to the redemptive process he's taking others through. Mm-hmm. But again, for those of you that are watching this, SulaLeal.com mm-hmm. and TakeFlightSurvivors.org.
Yes.
Those are your websites.
Yes.
And her book, which we'll be discussing on a later conversation, is The Unashamed Bride. Mm-hmm. Sula, thank you for being here. I just want to honor you. You're just doing an incredible work.
Thanks for making this easy to talk about stuff that I've never talked about publicly before, Dan.
I couldn't tell.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
Well, friends. Until next time, God bless and Godspeed.
You've been listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. Visit me at dandevall.com where you'll discover merch, books, and the opportunity to engage in our private social network. Join the tribe by subscribing to our email list and supporting this podcast.